agenda, it looks like it's being put on with a neo-mercantilist bent, that is, a kind of a nationalist, patriotic, economic prioritizing of the U.S. economy rather than a kind of a free market neoliberal approach.
Business first over everything, and corporate power expanding all the time. KJ, no, we're going to have to leave it right there, but we're going to, obviously, we've been on this for years with you. This story is not going away. In fact, it's going to get more intense more quickly as soon as the Trumpians get into place, although who knows if they'll be better or worse than Obama and Clinton and Clinton and Bush. But we're going to watch it closely. We thank you for the incredibly good information. And you all listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 27th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, taking place Thursdays through Sundays until March 4th at PCC Cascade in Portland. The Cascade Festival of African Films shows us Africa through the eyes of Africans, rather than a Vision of Africa package for Western viewers. The films celebrate Africa's achievements, expose its failures, and reveal possibilities for a hopeful future. The festival includes live music performances, plays and short films, documentary, and a Women's Filmmakers Week. Again, that's the 27th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, Thursday through Sundays until March 4th, at Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at Portland Community College, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. More information and specific times for the screenings can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
When you live in a poor neighborhood, you're living in an area where you have to have poor schools. When you have poor schools, you have poor teachers. When you have poor teachers, you get a poor education. Poor education, you can only work on a poor paying job. And that poor paying job enables you to live again in a poor neighborhood. So it's a very vicious cycle.
On February 17th, from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary, we will focus on the life and legacy of Malcolm X. Join us on February 17th from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. We will focus on the life and legacy of Malcolm X.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 11:01 a.m. Coming up on the Radio Zine, an interview with Jenny Monet, the independent writer and journalist embedded and arrested at Standing Rock. Followed at 11:30 with Words and Pictures, with a conversation with animators including Bill Plimpton, Anne-Marie Fleming, and Mark Shapiro. Their work is part of the Animated Worlds Showcase at the Portland International Film Festival. And thanks to all the KBOO members for your generous support. If you've not yet become a member of the KBOO Foundation, you can remedy that oversight. Yes, you can. At kboo.fm/give. All that and more coming up, so stay tuned.
I'm a Pisces, and I'm on the cusp of an Aquarius, and so I gotta say, take me to the water. Take me to the water. Take me to the water to be baptized. Because you see, I know that none but the righteous, the righteous, none but the righteous shall see God. So take me to the water at Coombsby, child. Take me to if it's turbulent, and I don't mind if it's calm, and I don't mind if it's green, I don't mind if it's blue, but as long as it's water, then I feel at home.
You're listening to Intersections Radio, the podcast where we geek out on all things intersectionality. I'm your host, Sarika Mehta. Welcome, and thanks for tuning in. Some of you may know I've been on hiatus for several months due to a recent tiny addition to my life. I had a baby boy in June, and well, so very much has happened in the news since then. My son is thriving, and the world has changed quite drastically. Back in June, during the last episode, I told you I'd be back. Well, here I am. I'm not going anywhere. Nope, not moving to Canada. We're still here, and I'm glad you are too. Now, on to business. Jenny Monet is a freelance journalist who focuses on issues concerning Indigenous people around the world. She's a member of the Laguna Pueblo, a tribal nation in New Mexico, and grew up among Indian reservations in the Southwest. More recently, she's been embedded at Standing Rock, North Dakota, covering the water protectors and their supporters as they protest the Dakota Access Pipeline. On February 1st, there was a raid of arresting protesters at Standing Rock by the Morton County Sheriff's Department. While reporting for Indian Country Media Network and the Center for Investigative Reporting's Reveal, Jenny found herself arrested among the protesters, despite showing her press credentials. She was held for 40 hours before being released and has been charged with criminal trespassing and rioting. These were the same charges Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! Faced when she went to Standing Rock, but they were dropped the same day. The charges against Jenny have not yet been dropped. I spoke with Jenny Monet on February 6th, 5 days after her arrest, and just a few days before the Army Corps of Engineers granted easement to build the pipeline, and before the evacuation announcements. We talked about her arrest and how this affects freedom of press, becoming the subject of her story, and what happens next at Standing Rock. This is Intersections Radio. Jenny Monet, thanks so much for joining me. Let's first talk about how long have you been covering the protests at Standing Rock?
My first story that I filed from Standing Rock was about the September 3rd dog attacks. And if you don't know what that is this event that happened involving the protesters or water protectors near the reservation, near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, and their clashes with private security guards that were hired to guard the Dakota Access Pipeline. And as a way to control the crowd of the water protectors, these security guards had used guard dogs, like attack dogs on leashes, on some of the water protectors who actually were visibly seen bitten. And these dogs had visible bloody jaws from biting humans. And that was kind of the galvanizing moment behind the movement at Standing Rock. And because it was so dramatically documented by Amy Goodman, a journalist who was here and put together a very compelling and dramatic video that went viral and alarmed not only the nation, but the world. People as far away as Laos had seen that video when we saw a woman, an Indigenous woman advocate there in Luang Prabang for a visiting kind of press conference and speech for President Obama present. And Alice Matthew stood up before the president. She was one of the selected few to come out and be able to ask the president a question. And she asked him directly about the Dakota Access Pipeline, because it was in that galvanizing week where this video was being circulated and a heightened awareness was made around the protection for the Missouri River and its you know, possible threat of being polluted by the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I think that even then, before that time, I think maybe it had not really been on President Obama's radar. And so the timing of it all was really spectacular.
Wow. So pretty much since the beginning, you were there. And then, as you said, last Wednesday, you were arrested in a raid in a sweep of protesters who were taken by the Morton County Sheriff's Department. You were there on site, as I understand it, for both the Indian Country Media Network and for Center for Investigative Reporting's podcast Reveal. Take us back to the incident, the arrest. Describe what happened for us.
Yeah, so I was kind of just working from the house that I'm renting. It's about half an hour away from the main protest site, the Ocheti Shikoe protest camp. And I was filing a story. So I was just kind of pacing my time through the day. And then I suddenly got some calls from some of my sources at camp and said, you really need to be here. The cops are moving in. And at the time, you know, I follow a couple of informative feeds on Facebook and just online on social media. And you start to kind of see what might be rumor or what might be, you know, actual verified facts coming in. And so there was this one kind of feed about police moving in on this thing called the Last Child Camp. So when I got the call, I kind of realized, well, this is something I should be going to. And when I arrived, I had approached the camps just before the roadblocks went up. The Bureau of Indian Affairs agents had arrived on the border where the reservation ends and Morton County jurisdiction begins. And the BIA was there with their cars blocking anyone coming into the camps or leaving. And those are multiple reports that I've received from people who saw those security blockades. So I just arrived moments before those blockades went up. And as I approached the camp, right across Highway 1806 on the west end, there's a bluff. And it overlooks the original Ocheti Shikoe camp. It overlooks this highly contested blockade at the Backwater Bridge. It stands right over it. And I happened to get onto the easement of where these seven teepees had been erected by some of the water protectors. And there was Chase Iron Eyes. And Chase Iron Eyes is the local Standing Rock Sioux tribal member. And he's also considered a leader, and I put that almost in air quotes because no one likes these labels right now at camp, but he was someone who was behind this resistance camp that was being set up on top of this bluff right across from the Ocheti Shikoe camp. And I walked up with him and we talked, and he said, you know, this is an action by descendants of Crazy Horse. We're not giving up. This is treaty territory. We're standing true to this fight. And for them, it was ultimate resistance. If you can imagine what kind of, say, radicals might be involved in, you know, kind of the civil rights era of the 1960s, this should be seen as a real radicalized approach to taking the idea and notions of treaty rights to the very rawness and the extreme. And that land right there, that where the seven teepees were had been erected, is considered historic treaty land. It's the 1851 Treaty of Fort Laramie. And Chase Iron Eyes has been impassioned about restoring those historic treaty rights and getting back to this very kind of raw nature of what sovereignty is and has been for tribes prior to colonization. And so it was a real strong message in that way. You had a lot of young, impassioned followers who had corralled around Iron Eyes, many of whom had been there since early August. So these are people who, you know, have endured month after month at these camps, including sub-freezing conditions during the North Dakota winter, and they felt entitled, extremely entitled to be up there, despite the fact that it was private property owned by one of the largest landowners in Morton County. Not only is he a large landowner of Morton County, but he's also a landowner who has controversially leased some of his property to the Dakota Access Pipeline for the project. And I say controversial because some of his land holdings and dealings have come under scrutiny on whether how legal the deals have been made. But this bluff where these seven teepees were also part of this greater landowner's land. And so, you know, every time that there are these confrontations between police and water protectors, the narrative always whittles down to police saying that water protectors are on private land and water protectors fighting back and saying, no, this is historic treaty land.
Right.
And that narrative hasn't shifted throughout the movement. And that was the situation here on that day that I arrived up to this treaty camp where I was arrested for criminal trespassing and engaging in a riot.
As I understand it, those are the charges that have been brought against you. You were released from holding, but these charges have been brought against you. And as I also understand it, the Morton County media had been silent about your arrest. Is that correct?
Well, I want to pay some recognition to the Bismarck Tribune and Carolyn Gruskin, who's just been, you know, a stalwart reporter on this story, chronicling its major developments, and even its not-so-major developments since the movement really started taking shape in late July, in mid-July. And Caroline is an accomplished student at journalism, and she's really just shaped and crafted a solid understanding of the situation here in North Dakota. So she requested to do an interview with me today, and the piece just came out today, and I realized in the aftermath of her interviewing me and putting the story out there exactly how grateful I was for her assistance and her service, because I'm in this unique position now of not only writing about my own arrest, but also being in an awkward place of not being able to go and do the kind of reporting that I would do if it were somebody else. For instance, I'm having trouble obtaining my own police records. You know, I can't easily obtain facts by contacting the public information officer of Morton County now based on my own account. Yesterday, I had asked for my mugshot, and I had to now go through my attorney and people from my news organizations, my clients that I work for, to request that on my behalf. So it's a very strange dynamic, and you know, I've never had to be in a situation where I'm basically reporting on myself. And Caroline shined a light on a lot of what's going on in the minds of the law enforcement who are behind my arrest and who are defending their arrest of me.
That is an awkward position, a strange position to be in, where you've had to navigate this as both a journalist, that is, you are the story. So before Caroline approached you, how did you have to navigate this?
Well, it's still very new. I was arrested on Wednesday. I didn't get released from jail until late Thursday, and I didn't start really producing any kind of dialogue or content until Friday morning. And over the weekend, I really just kind of took a step back. I went to ceremony on Saturday night. I took a breather for a bit on Sunday and really just kind of took a step back to re-examine where I stood, because things have changed now. Even though I'm still committed to covering the story and being one of the few journalists on the ground here, it hasn't changed the dynamic of how I'm going to be treated the next time I interview the governor or the sheriff or the North Dakota Patrol. It's just a weird dynamic, and I don't think that in my position and in my opinion am I going to change my outreach to cover this story from all angles and from all sides. I feel like I've made a committed and concerted effort to do that, but I wonder if that will still be the case from the other side of law enforcement. Will they treat me differently? And that's yet to be seen. I mean, the story here at Standing Rock is intensifying. we're starting to see tensions rising as the camps start to dismantle. And I worry about the next confrontation or the next confrontation and where, how I might be treated on those front lines. And I have to say, those front lines are where you really start to get a lot of truth on both sides of this police versus protester narrative. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I don't think I'm going to put myself in the line of getting arrested again, and I surely didn't feel like I was doing that on Wednesday, February 1st. I felt like I was in a safe space on Wednesday, February 1st, and was actually a bit surprised to find myself arrested.
I think that anyone in that position might find themselves a bit surprised. Talking about the freedom of press issue here, I know that you're said that you don't want to change the way you feel about reporting on these stories, and you might be treated differently on the other side, at least on the law enforcement side. But do you feel that freedom of press is at risk? Do you feel a different kind of confidence, or do you feel nervous about approaching these stories after your arrest? How do you feel about this?
I don't feel nervous. I don't know that my cage has been rattled, if that's the question. In fact, if anything, it's just emboldened me to just stand stronger by my laurels. I've not posed anything in any sort of untruthful way, and I've not stated anything that may be construed in any sort of false-leaning approach. So I just feel like I will continue to do the job that I do and do it well and also see this story through. I think what also is just really disturbing for me is that this arrest, this issue now that I faced of having to fight my own fight against Morton County, people that I've been respectful to throughout this movement, I find it really challenging to actually distract me from this story that I've been so committed to. That was already a daunting job to begin with, because it's such a critical time for the development of whatever should come of this pipeline battle. And so now, for better or worse, my attention is now divided, and I tend to think it's worse, because taking my eyes off of this fast-moving issue that has really catapulted into a historic moment, not just for Indian Country, but for all Americans who came here, right? And even people from all over the world who came here. This mm-hmm. was a historic moment. Mm-hmm. Standing Rock is always going to be this remembered moment in our lives about the integrity of people power when they come together, when they raise their voices, especially at a time right now when we're faced with, you know, so many differences politically. I just feel like that emboldens me to continue to do more.
I want to turn now, as you were saying, back to covering Standing Rock. I felt that the media had gained most traction with Standing Rock towards the end of the Obama administration, frankly. At least that's where I felt like that was when the most attention was paid. But there were points throughout. And it feels like the media has lost traction in this after President Trump took office, because there have been a lot of distractions in the first couple of weeks of this new administration. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, there's no doubt that President Trump administration has made it very difficult for Indian Country as a whole, not just for Standing Rock. And I think that Standing Rock becomes this kind of petri dish of what could happen for other tribes as we see the unraveling of the developments of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Already in the very early days of a Trump administration, we have seen this president sign executive memoranda to advance the Dakota Access Pipeline, to mm-hmm. ignore the diplomatic environmental impact statement that was mm-hmm. celebrated on December 4th here at right. Standing Rock, and it's just been a real direct assault on reversing that, and just moving forward with an energy agenda that is questionable, is alarming, and quite honestly, comes with a lot of uncertainty about what that may mean for the very future generations that brought so many people here to pray and to fight to protect very basic but vital resources like water. And that's why it's a very interesting time here at Standing Rock. And not only that, but around the world, I think we're starting to see Standing Rocks happen in communities wherever they are. That fire that was lit here is now burning in communities worldwide about this kind of intensity to really rise up and defend and to resist.
That's a good note to think about. What happens next for you, and what happens next at Standing Rock?
What happens next for me? Well, I'm going to continue working on this story until I feel like it's found a nice, I think nice is a strange word to use right now, but where I feel like it has a natural pause and a breath. And, you know, I've made lots of relationships out here on the reservation, but also in neighboring Bismarck and Mandan and the whole community. And, you know, despite my arrest, even I have really had nice moments with North Dakotans of all kinds. And I really have a lot of heart for these communities. They're rural, they're small, they're unique in the fact that they're not New York, for instance, right? I mean, they're just, even towns like Bismarck, and I find them special, and I think for anyone who might have that kind of sense of exposure to communities, you know, in other places, I find these lovely qualities of the people I've talked to that have various opinions and ideas, even around an issue as controversial as the pipeline. Unfortunately, we can't ignore that there are others out there who are so impassioned with their beliefs that, unfortunately, it brings in it agitates the kind of climate that, you know, is kind of trying to build healthy dialogue. And so I recognize it for that as well, which makes it an interesting place to be at this very interesting time that we're experiencing in America. And I don't know what happens next in terms of my kind of work. I've been working on Indigenous peoples issues, covering those kind of topics for many years, and I'll continue to cover those kind of topics, whether that's here at Standing Rock or around the world. It's a strange time for me too. I never anticipated I'd be out here living in rural North Dakota, knowing everything there is to know about a pipeline.
Do you have anything more you want to talk about?
No, I think I would just say this, that it's really hard time right here for lots of people who've really poured their heart and soul into this movement. And I'm talking about the water protectors or even some of the tribal members, some of the tribal leadership. And it's just growing pains at transition. And, you know, I see a lot of historic trauma coming out, and that's really what we saw kind of get healed during those summer months at the camp. And what made it so beautiful was that love that came out of that healing. And I think of that because it was a very real experience that was felt. And I hope that it can return here and for tribal communities across the country and the world, because there's a lot of healing to do. And I hope that that spirit and that remembrance of that spirit for all who experienced it doesn't go away.
I hope that too. Jenny Monet, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, you're very welcome, Streetka. It's so great to hear from you again.
That was journalist Jenny Monet joining me from Standing Rock, North Dakota. Follow her on Twitter at Miss Monet. To listen to the podcast of this interview, check out intersectionsradio.wordpress.com. Visit the same website for previous episodes of this podcast, and join the Facebook community at facebook.com/intersectionsradio. You're listening to Intersections Radio. Program airs on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Sari Gametta. Thanks for listening.
Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn. last so much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about this. And we got them. This is a show tune, but the show hasn't been written for it yet. Hound dogs on my trail, school children sitting in jail, black cat cross my path, I think every day's gonna be my last. Lord have mercy on this land of mine, we all gonna get it in due time. I don't belong here, I don't belong there, I've even stopped believing in prayer. Don't tell me, I'll tell you. Me and my people just about do. I've been there, so I know. Keep on saying, go slow. But that's just the trouble. Washing the windows, picking the cotton, you're just plain rotten, you're too damn lazy, you're thinking it's crazy, where am I going, what am I doing, I don't know, just try to do your very best, stand up, be counted with all the rest, cause everybody knows about. Bet you thought I was kidding.
We're not kidding. This is Community Radio, KBOO Portland. Coming up at 11:30, Words and Pictures, your host SW Concert, featuring Bill Plimpton, Anne-Marie Fleming, and Mark Shapiro, and more. Their work is part of the Animated Worlds Showcase at the Portland International Film Festival. Let's take a listen.
A veces pienso que estoy loca, aunque sé que no lo estoy. Tus ojos clavados en los míos.
And welcome to a special episode of Words and Pictures, the show all about the narrative art scene. I'm your host, SW Concert, and today we are live in the studio, and we have quite a show today. We are talking about feature animation, and we have two brand new full-length movies coming to theaters. They're both pretty unusual, not your standard family fare. Bill Plimpton has joined us in the studios once again. Bill, welcome back.
Happy to be here. I love coming to Oregon. As you know, I'm from Oregon City, so it's like coming home and seeing my family and also showing a great, great film. I think it's the best film I've ever done.
So you flew in from New York just to talk to our listeners
today.
Just
to talk to you guys, yeah.
Well, Bill's new feature, and it's his eighth feature, if I'm counting right.
Animated feature,
is called Revengeance. And it'll be having its U.S. premiere right here in Portland for your hometown audience. And we'll be joined in a moment or two by Anne-Marie Fleming. Anne is calling in from Vancouver, Canada, and she'll be coming to town to introduce her film Window Horses. This is all part of the Portland International Film Festival. We'll also be talking with the redoubtable Rose Bond. Hello, Rose. Rose is bringing an event to the Hollywood Theater next week. It's called Trends in Latin American Experimental Animation. And first, we have on the line from scenic Hillsboro, Oregon, Mark Shapiro. Mark is the marketing head at Leica Entertainment, and he's been working with the Portland International Film Festival to bring all of this animation to the screen. It's all part of a series called Animated Worlds. So, Mark, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here. I'm really, really delighted to be here with such an esteemed group of people I really admire in the animation world.
Oh, yeah, this is a great group. And, well, Laika is known internationally now for its stop-motion animation. Coraline, The Box Trolls, Kubo and the Two Strings. Family-friendly films with plucky young heroes and heroines, for the most part. And you at Laika, you're sponsoring this festival series, Animated Worlds.
Correct. What I've done is, through my job, I travel to a lot of animation festivals, and I often run into Bill Plimpton on the road in very strange and far-off places, and I'm on a lot of juries, and over the years, over the last 10 years that I've been at Laika, served on several juries, and often these films don't get played in the United States, and especially on a big screen, and this is a way that we can kind of showcase some of the best, things that were either jury winners at festivals I've attended and been on juries, or at festivals that I've attended where, you know, I've just seen them and they've been either recognized, won, or just stood out as incredible animation.
Now, we mentioned the feature films, and Bill's is part of this, and Anne-Marie's as well. And there's also lots of shorts. You brought some back from the Zagreb Festival, which is an incredibly well-regarded festival in Croatia.
Correct. And, yeah, these are from not only Zagreb, but Stuttgart, which is a great festival, Annecy, which is in France in June, which is an incredible, lovely place to be. Anybody who loves animation should go to this lovely town called Annecy, the medieval town not too far from Geneva, Switzerland, and also a festival called Fantoche, which is outside of Zurich. So, and a few other festivals.
Yeah, let's not forget Ottawa. That's one of my favorites, personally, in Canada.
Absolutely.
So tell us about some of the highlights that people can expect. This weekend, it's really ramping up the Animated Worlds Festival.
Yeah, so this is taking place at the Witzel Auditorium noon on Sunday. And we have a really, really great collection of films, some stop motion, some hand-drawn, some that are funny, some that are reflective. We've had in the past, I've done this, this is my fourth year of doing this program, and a lot of it reflects the animators and where they are in life. A lot of them are independent animators, sometimes students. But what we've pulled here is a really, really colorful collection of different styles and different story formats. And sometimes you just get lost in the beauty of the animation. And that's what we try to do, is pull together kind of a diverse group of films that are funny, heartbreaking, thought-provoking, and just plain, you know, amazing to be able to sit and watch on that big screen with great sound.
And some of them, I'm sure, hew to the Bill Plimpton rule of being 5 minutes long or less, and funny and cheap.
Yeah.
All right. We do have Anne-Marie Fleming on the phone from Vancouver, and we want to say hello. So, Anne-Marie, you are the director of the animated feature film Window Horses, The Poetic Persian Epiphany of Rosie Ming.
That is correct.
Welcome to the show. I want to mention that the star of your film, Rosie Ming, is voiced by the Golden Globe-winning actress Sandra Oh. A nice score there, if I may say.
Yes, I'm very lucky.
My girlfriend is a huge Grey's Anatomy fan, so Dr. Christina Yang is a favorite there. So, tell us a little bit about Window Horses. It's all about international communication and miscommunication.
Yes. The story is pretty straightforward. It's a young woman. She's half Chinese and half Persian, it turns out. She's from North Vancouver. I live in Vancouver, and she's invited to participate in a poetry festival in Shiraz, Iran, a place that she's never been to, and a place that her grandparents that have raised her really don't want her to go. And when she goes there, she finds out all these stories about the father who she thought abandoned her when she was a small child. But this story is really just a conduit for me to talk about tolerance, about listening to others, and about the power of our imaginations. Hello? Oops.
Get three queued up. We want to set up a little clip from your film here, and the film is Window Horses, and let's hear a little bit from the film.
my goodness. You've been invited to a poetry festival in Iran? In Iran? Oh my God, that's weird.
Exactly.
You entered a poetry festival in Iran.
I didn't. If I'd enter a poetry festival, which I wouldn't, it would be in Paris. Paris, France, the land of my soul.
Yeah, okay, don't really get the whole French connection, but whatever. I'm your closest friend. And I didn't even know you wrote poetry, so what gives with that?
Well, it's a private thing that I do. Nothing special.
Right, nothing special. Well, how'd you get invited then? Oh my God. You're published?
Self-published. I only printed about three of them.
Published, dude? I can't believe you didn't tell me.
I don't know, sorry. It just too personal.
Ah, intimacy issues or what? Hey, watch where you're mopping.
Hey, you two, stop blocking off.
That's a clip from Window Horses, The Poetic Persian Epiphany of Rosie Ming. So Rosie is a bit of a, this is a very simple character design, by the way, sort of an every woman. And she has a sort of innocent air to her. And there's some fun moments where she gets introduced to Persian culture on her way to become a poet in Iran.
Well, Stick Girl, that's my avatar for almost 30 years. She's made a lot of films with me, and this is her first feature film, and first time she's been given a character name, Rosie Ming, and first time she's had someone else voice her, Sandra Oh, so it's a pretty big deal for her. But you're right, she really is an every person, and she's quite a different style than any of the other characters in the film, but she's really someone who's, with just a simple gesture, you don't judge her. She's completely open, and she can go places and say things and respond in ways that maybe, more fully formed human beings can't at times.
And the audience gets to commiserate with many of the awkward moments in the film.
Yeah, it's quite nice. She meets a lot of people. She goes on a journey, and people are very, very kind and patient with her, and they really want to help her broaden her understanding of the world and of herself.
So you're going to be in town for screenings on Sunday and Monday. You're going to be in Portland, coming down from Vancouver, BC. We're looking forward to seeing you, and you'll be taking Q&As from the audience?
Yes, I'm very interested in having a conversation with the audience. It seems like a pretty interesting time to be talking about these things and having a film set in Iran.
This is Bill Plimpton. I saw your film, and I love your film. It's really, really fabulous. Beautiful, beautiful story. Very heartwarming. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Where does the title come from?
It's such a long story, okay, but I'll try and do it short. The Poetic Persian Epiphany of Rosie Ming is really a nod to those Perilous Perils of Penelope Pitstop films that I used to watch when I was growing up, about, a naive young woman goes on a search and all these daring adventures. But Window Horses is a combination. This story started a long time ago in Germany when I was at an artist residency, and literally I used to spend every day writing, looking out my window and looking at horses. But also there's a poem by this Irish fellow, Lewis McNeice, called Snow, and the last couplet of that poem has a lot to do with the themes of this film. So if anybody wants to look that up, Snow by Lewis McNeice.
Well, that's, we're looking forward to seeing the movie. And thanks for that explanation, by the way. I was a little too embarrassed to ask that myself. But we have Bill, of course, in the studio, and he's got the screening coming up on Saturday and Sunday of Revengeance. Bill, this is your eighth animated feature, as we said, but the first one you didn't write the script for.
No, I wrote the script. I co-wrote it, but it's mostly written by Jim Lujan, who will be here, actually, Saturday and Sunday to help present the film. And he's 10 times funnier than I am.
Oh, come on. He is an underground cartoonist in L.A. He's done a bunch of animated shorts for Adult Swim and Spike and Mike. So people might have seen his stuff there. Let's set up a little bit of a clip from Revengeance. Tell us what this scene is. This is a scene with a bounty hunter and a senator.
Well, it's a very curious concept behind this film, because it does deal with this bad guy, Deathface is his name.
Yeah, he's a not so savory character, Senator Deathface, an ex wrestler and ex biker, but you couldn't exactly say he's gone straight.
No, but the interesting thing about it is that he was a TV reality star. He went into politics, very corrupt politics, and the most curious thing, you'll see it when you see the film, is there's some sort of videotape, salacious videotape of him doing some naughty things, which is unbelievable now that we hear that the Russians have these videotapes of Trump. So I'm dying to hear what Trump did that's so salacious.
Well, here's a clip from Revengeance.
Let's just cut to the chase, bounty hunter. I know you're running with Lana. I just want to know why. How'd you let that happen?
Yeah, right about now, I'm asking myself the same question.
Won't you listen to me? And listen to me real careful, Rod Rossi. Oh, where'd she go? Where is the tape?
This footage is incredible. Have you taken it to any other stations?
No, Connie, I'm offering you an exclusive. That story you did on the kittens in the storm drain, oh, it was just adorable.
Surely there must be something you want for this.
Well, there is one little thing you can do for me. When's your next live feed?
Jim did every one of those voices you heard.
Jim did every single voice.
He did 80% of the voices in the film. So he's a genius. I mean, he did the story. He wrote the story, which is an amazing story. He designed the characters, designed the backgrounds, did 80% of the voices, and the music. So he's this young genius guy. And when I read his stories, saw his films, I said, this guy has got inside my head, because his humor and the characters are so similar to my characters. So that's why I wanted to work with him.
Now, I did hear one of the voices in the film is the excellent political cartoonist Lalo Alcaraz from L.A. So there are, I guess it's kind of like The Simpsons. There are a few extra voices along the way. But yeah, when Lujan sent you the script, you said it reminded you of Inherent Vice, the Thomas Pynchon novel that P.T. Anderson adapted into a film not too long ago.
Exactly, yeah. There's a lot of cultural underbelly of L.A. It's very, it's kind of a underground kind of film. It's almost like a R. Crumb comic. It's very different style than my usual style. It's very gross and hardcore, but it's not for kids. I want to tell people that it's not appropriate for children.
Now, while you are a firm believer in the entertainment value of good old-fashioned cartoon mayhem, there is certainly a timing and a choreography to that.
Yes. Well, again, it's Jim's story, and he can talk about that at the screening. I believe it's tomorrow night at 8:45, I think, at the Laurelhurst.
And then again on Sunday afternoon.
2:15 at the Witzel.
Yeah, we'll ask. Actually, we still have Mark Shapiro on the line, so we'll give Mark. We'll let Mark tell a little bit about the details of the screenings that are coming up.
Okay, so the ones that I'm screening, and again, we pulled these from different programs from around the world, different festivals that I had mentioned earlier. A good collection of hand drawn, some stop mo, and others. And again, none of these are from the United States. Everything coming from the outside. A lot of Canadian representation, Germany, and just again, kind of reflecting the state of animation. And you know, it can be heartbreaking. It can be funny. It can be ironic. All of those things that make great films. And all the films are short. And it's a really diverse program. So, you know, there'll be some that are colorful or story driven, and others that just you know, are just about things that can happen and worst case scenarios and funny things that can happen, ironic things that can happen.
Okay, yeah, that's Shortcut 6, which is the short animated films. So Revengeance is playing, yes, Saturday at 8:45 at the Laurelhurst, and also Sunday at the Witzel, and that's a 2:15 p.m. matinee showing. We have Window Horses playing Sunday, 7:45 p.m. at, I believe that's the Witzel, and then there's another screening on Monday, 6 p.m. At the Regal Cinemas Fox Tower. So,
Can I say something?
Sure.
I do want to tell people that both Jim and I will be there, and everybody who comes, I will give them a free sketch. I will do a drawing from Revengeance, and hopefully we can talk Jim into doing a drawing, because he's actually a pretty good artist, too.
Oh, fantastic. So that's something to look forward to. And Anne-Marie, we're looking forward to seeing you in town as well, and always a pleasure to have animators coming through Portland.
I'm really excited to come, and unfortunately I cannot offer a sketch to everybody who comes, but I'm, you know, I'll tell a joke.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to the jokes. So that's the available at PIFF. Let's see. It's if you Google PIFF Animated Worlds, it's the Portland International Film Festival. It's at nwfilm.org. So thank you so much for joining us today, Anne-Marie Fleming. She's on the line from Vancouver, Canada. Her film is Window Horses. Bill Plimpton is here in the studio with his eighth feature film, Revengeance. It's premiering here at the Portland International Film Festival. And Mark Shapiro is helping put it all together. He's the marketing head at Leica Entertainment. Thanks to all of you. Thanks, Mark, Bill, Anne-Marie. Thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm live in the studio today. I've been talking about animated worlds. Joined by many cool people, but I want to round things out today. We are joined in just 1 minute by the luminous and luminary animator, Rose Bond. Rose is bringing an event to the Hollywood Theater. It's called Trends in Latin American Experimental Animation. And Rose is here. Rose, welcome. Welcome back to the studio again. Welcome back to Words and Pictures.
Yeah, it's a wondrous pleasure to be here with Bill and everybody else. It just makes me think about how great it is to be in the Northwest and how big Portland and the Northwest have been in independent views.
Well, you've certainly been traveling around the world. You've done installations in England and other places around the United States, overseas. So you're back in town, though, and you are bringing some films from international filmmakers to the Hollywood Theater. And this is a series that's curated by Lena X. Aguirre and Cecilia, I'm going to hope I get this right, okay. Traslavinia.
Right.
And now, is this a show that's been put on elsewhere? I heard in New England. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's been around the United States. It's actually been to Austria, Slovenia, Croatia, Romania. It's coming, this is its Northwest tour. And so our friend and colleague Ruth Hayes up at Evergreen is the one that contacted me, and she's kind of spearheaded this little stop Tacoma, Seattle, Portland kind of thing for Lena, who will actually be here in person. So the event is kind of a two-prong event on February 24th, which is next Friday, and there'll be a talk. Lena will be giving a talk at PNCA at 12:30, and then the screening will be at the Hollywood at 7 p.m. that evening.
And I see that it's a selection of, 16 short films from Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Chile, Mexico, and Puerto Rico, produced between 2007 and 2014, all by independent filmmakers and artists.
Right. It's the program is called Trends in Latin American Experimental Animation. You know, and Bill can talk. He's been on panels on this experimental animation, what have you. But it's always kind of a wonder to me. It was like, what is experimental animation? I haven't got much of a peek at the show, but I have seen the grid of stills from it. And we don't often see a lot of Latin American animation at Zagreb or Ottawa. So it's like, what's going on down in Bolivia? What's going on in Peru? How did this happen? It's a collection of about 16 films, all of them relatively short. I was just looking. The average is well under 5 minutes. The way that they've curated, Lena and her colleague Cecilia, is around these trends. So you've got the life of things, the life of form, and constructing atmospheres and I don't know where the second one is, but anyway, it's going to be interesting to see how all that works.
Well, Mark and the folks at Leica will have to show up because there's a lot of stop motion in there.
There's a lot of stop motion from what I've seen. You know, you think of, when I think of Latin America, I think of, you know, Mexico, our nearest neighbor. I think of, you know, some of the folk art or the Day of the Dead art. And I know it's had a lot of influence in arts. And it seems like this interest in materiality is really looks like it's going to be prominent in this showcase.
Yeah, I noticed that there's a lot of film scratching. There's painting and metals things like that. So it's clearly branching out from sort of the computer generated imagery that we're so used to in American TV and films. So there's a pixelation, stop motion drawing, film scratching, and Bill will be interested too that there's hand drawing. So Bill, you still do most of your stuff with hand drawing.
Yeah, in fact, I'll have a lot of the drawings there at the show, so people can actually see how I make the films. I did every drawing that's on the screen, about 40,000 drawings, and it's a pleasure to draw an entire film.
So Rose, materiality right there. Will there be Lena, who's the curator, will be there, and what will we find out about some of these artists?
Well, she belongs to an organization, a collective, whatever you have, called Mobius Animation, and they've been working on the dissemination and study of experimental animation since 2009. So it seems to me that they've been around South America quite a bit, both searching for talent and also conducting workshops and finding people maybe who didn't know they were animators and can really approach things in a really fresh way. So that's what I'm kind of looking forward to seeing. And it's such a treat to have Bill and Marie here in person. Oftentimes as an animator, we send our works off. And we're not there. We're behind the scenes. Nobody knows what we look like. But to be able to have someone who has curated, who can tell the stories of the makers behind this work, the intentionality of the work, what kind of issues are they talking about in South America?
Yeah, some political issues, I'm sure, some social issues, but also just art has just become more political than ever. Even being an artist, even being a journalist these days is more political than ever.
Yeah.
So this is happening at the Hollywood Theater next week. And you said there's also a talk at the Pacific Northwest College of Art.
Yeah, I want to invite people. I'm teaching at PNCA, and I've got a new home. If you haven't seen it, it's pretty grand. And we have a very nice media tech where we can show films to smaller audiences and nice sound system, that kind of thing. So that's really great to have another venue in town. So that talk is going to be 12:30 on Friday, the February 24th at PNCA. It's free, 12:30 to 1:30. And then that evening, 7 p.m. And Hollywood always has great prices and nice cheap beer and popcorn. So love to support them.
Do you have a website where people can go for more info?
You know, I think the quickest way to go is to just Google Latin American Experimental Animation Hollywood. And you'll see the page will come up. You'll get a nice grid image of stills from about 15 of the films.
And I'm going to try and make Rose blush by saying that back in 2007, before people really had animation on their mobile phones or anything like that, Rose was in charge of curating all the installations for the Platform Festival, which was really expanding how animation was done. So your chops in the experimental animation field are very, very solid.
Thanks, Concha. That was an incredible festival. People still talk about it.
They still do. In New York, they ask, when's Platform coming back?
Yeah, I hear that.
Well, we've been talking about animation today, feature animation and experimental animation. Animated Worlds is sponsored by the Portland International Film Festival and Leica Entertainment. Bill Plimpton's eighth feature film is called Revengeance. Anne-Marie Fleming's first feature is called Window Horses. And Mark Shapiro joined us from Leica. And Rose Bond is here. She's helping bring the event, Trends in Latin American Experimental Animation, to the Hollywood Theater. Thanks to all of you today. It's been fantastic to have you in the studio.
Real pleasure.
And thanks to all our guests today. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.FM. You've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. You can find an archived version of this show later today at KBOO.FM/Words and Pictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
Tus ojos clavados en los míos. La furia se apodera de mi mente, el coraje niebla la razón.
And this is KBOO Portland. The time is 11:59 a.m. Coming up next is Moving On with your host, the redoubtable, the inimitable, and what a gal, Lori Sonnenfeld. That's coming up at 12 noon right after these important announcements. So stay tuned to KBOO Portland, your community radio.
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meeting in writing, please email monica@kboo.org.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Winter Folk 29 on Saturday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the